in my perspective, if you have a product that, you know, can be talked about in publications, if you're not on an affiliate platform, you are completely losing out on really maximizing all the press opportunities for the brand.
Hi, I'm Adam Levinter, and you're listening to Shopify Masters, your companion for starting and building a business. As a founder, I can tell you press coverage is crucial. And not just any press coverage, but placement in some of the most trusted publications. The PR hits that will actually drive revenue for your business. Our guest, Lauren Kleiman, understands PR strategy unlike any other. She worked with PR agencies from the brand side and has launched her own agency and even started her own publication. Lauren's companies have helped some of the biggest D2C clients double or triple their press placements and unlock new revenue streams across the board. She's here today to share how an effective press strategy can affect your company's bottom line. Hey, Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Prior to Dream Day, you were at the founding team at Ritual. So you've been around PR for a while now. When you take a look at the sort of traditional PR agency landscape, where do you think these PR agencies are coming up short?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Just going back to, you know, my time at Ritual, I worked with all of the top PR agencies across the U.S. And just like you said, I found that they were coming up short in a lot of different ways. While they may have gotten us really good press, I didn't feel like they were evolving with the way that publishers were evolving, and that publishers are interested in surfacing brands and products that organically and authentically resonate with their audience, but also brands and products that can help make them money. And as you probably already know, commerce is a growing part of publishers' revenue. So I saw that basically without them doing any affiliate marketing, they weren't really helping publishers size up the business opportunity for partnering with the brand and meeting publishers where they're at. Additionally, brands typically have to hire a PR agency and an affiliate agency. And a lot of times those two end up actually competing with each other, saying that they got whatever hit, but the two are truly synergistic. But what I saw was that it was very bifurcated and one hand was not talking to the other.
Okay. So for those that aren't familiar, can we just level set for a moment? So what is the difference between affiliate marketing, an affiliate agency, an affiliate program, and an affiliate network? What are the differences here?
Yeah, great question. So affiliate marketing is essentially when you're working with different partners, could be at any point in the funnel. We refer to top of funnel partners, referring to top tier publications. Mid funnel are more like your bloggers and influencers. Sub affiliate networks like Skimlinks or Like to Know It or ShopStyle. And then bottom of funnel partners are partners that are either loyalty partners or coupon partners, whether that's like Rakuten or Honey. And then we do some card linked offers as well, like American Express or Platinum Card Holders or Capital One. And so basically affiliate marketing is just having other people talking about your products and getting compensated for talking about those products through a commission. So I would say probably 95% of publications that are recommending products, for example, are getting a commission on the back end anytime a, you know, consumer is purchasing that product.
Yeah, I think the differences are interesting between sort of classic affiliate marketing. You really hit on it, like the affiliate program part of it, the affiliate network. You know, you mentioned Rakuten. There's also ShareSale and a few others.
Yeah.
So I think listeners just want to distinguish between the differences here, and those that are thinking about affiliate marketing for the first time, how should they be thinking about it?
Yeah. On the platform side, there's a lot of different platforms, whether that's like ShareSale or PepperJam or Impact. Really depends on kind of the size of your program in terms of the different platforms that we recommend. Typically under $150,000 in affiliate revenue per month, we recommend ShareSale. It's pretty straightforward and very user-friendly. But when you start getting more revenue coming through the affiliate program, we recommend something more like Impact, which has much better tracking and attribution. You can set up custom conversion lines, meaning that, let's say, Vogue refers the traffic, but Honey is the last click to convert. You can set up commission structures where Vogue might get 80% of the commission and Honey gets 20%. So yeah, in terms of where to start, being on a platform, first and foremost, I think is one of the most important things. Mm-hmm. In my perspective, if you have a product that, you know, can be talked about in publications, if you're not on an affiliate platform, you are completely losing out on really maximizing all the press opportunities for the brand. Again, because publishers care about, you know, recommending brands and products that are going to authentically resonate with their audience, but they also care about making money. So, and generating, you know, that affiliate commission and revenue for their business. So, a lot of times, let's say that there's, you know, four different olive oil companies, publishers might say, okay, these authentically are really cool, and that's why we want to talk about them. But also, here's what their commission rate is, and here's what their EPC is, and here's what their AOV is. And they'll look at all these different metrics and kind of decide, you know, which olive oil company, for example, should be included.
And you can decide as a brand what your call to action would be. So my understanding is you can pay on a cost per sale, but there's also cost per lead campaigns. There's cost per impression campaigns. There's sort of a lot of variability or optionality here. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I would say in kind of the type of work that we do, we're typically working on a CPA basis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for a subscription vitamin company, for example, you may be able to flex up to like 75% or 100% of the first month's sale because the brand knows that they're going to be able to make that back up on the LTV. But typically the kind of, you know, revenue structure is that you are paying anywhere between 10 and 15% to top tier publishers. Sometimes you can flex up even to 20% per sale. And then, you know, the publisher is getting a commission of that product. And so typically it's CPA. There's some instances where we'll run CPC campaigns with publications where, for example, it'll be for $10,000, you get 10,000 clicks. And that publication is then responsible for driving, you know, as much views and clicks to the content that they're creating, whether that's through banner ads or newsletters or dedicated editorial.
So you guys have like kind of a modern PR play, I would say, that's more centered around performance versus sort of classic PR that is retainer based. Is that the main difference here in terms of your value prop?
Yeah, we actually operate like a traditional PR agency. The way that I describe us is we are a full service PR agency and full funnel affiliate marketing agency, all as part of one synergistic strategy. So with us, you would get everything that you would get from a traditional PR agency. However, our publicists are much more focused and versed and trained in understanding, you know, not pitching into a black hole and really using the data that affiliate provides to say, okay, these are the top five publications that performed best for this brand in the past. And these are going to be the ones that we're going to go really hard after this quarter in whatever way we can to try to find press that not only drives awareness that traditional press would, but can also have the opportunity to drive performance through the affiliate channel.
And it's not a one size fits all. And you've got an incredible roster of clients. Many of them are on Shopify, actually.
Yes.
Brightland, Olive Oil, Fly By Jing, Quince, and others. On the client side, what do you look for? What makes for a good client?
Yeah, such a great question. We really work with a lot of what we call category defining brands, where when you think of, you know, the D2C olive oil category, you might think of Brightland first, hopefully. They're really innovators in this space. So we work with a lot of really mission-driven brands, founder-led brands, brands that, you know, are constantly doing interesting things. Candidly, that makes our life so much easier when internally you have really interesting, you know, marketing campaigns or partnerships or collaborations. And then I think it should be stated that it's also important for the brand to have a product that when it gets into the editor's hands or into an influencer's hands or into whatever partner's hands, that it's going to sell itself and that they're going to like it. So we also try to work with products that we ourselves use and love every single day. You know, I drank my Clever Matcha this morning. I use my Brightland olive oil. I wear Quince clothes. Like, they're ones that our entire team is really like invested and bought into the mission of. And I think that passion really translates not only internally in our internal communications and to our communications with our clients, but also to editors and all of the partners that our team is working with.
Yeah. And I feel like you're almost doing half of the work for them. You know, as you mentioned, you're sussing out these clients at the beginning. So you talk about things like being mission driven, being founder led, having a story behind it. Ultimately, publishers want to publish a good story, something that's going to attract a lot of eyeballs. So if you can do that heavy lifting up front, I would imagine they're going to love you, right?
Yes, Absolutely. Our VP always says our job is to make editors' lives as easy as possible. And so to that point, I think that, yeah, we try to work with clients that we know are going to authentically resonate with publishers and that editors are going to care about. We are students of like the media landscape and what editors and publications are talking about. So we've kind of, you know, carved out this niche with what I would say is like these D2C first, you know, buzzy, again, category defining products and brands that have an amazing story to talk about, which, like I said, we're not scared of a challenge, but does make our life a lot easier.
How do you view social media platforms as it relates to what you do? So these platforms themselves are becoming a kind of PR marketplace for a lot of brands to amplify their reach. And so a lot of them will sort of bypass PR, sort of bypassing PR in quotes here, and publish directly on TikTok or on Facebook or Instagram or what have you. Are these platforms complementary to the PR space at this point? Are they competition? How do you see it?
Yeah, I think very much complementary to the PR space. And our team will do a lot of influencer seeding and, again, getting the product into the right people's hands. And our team will, you know, clip Instagram stories or posts, which kind of qualify as press in their own right when it's the right person sharing to their audience about a product. So I think, if anything, Instagram and TikTok have kind of like broadened the additional surfaces, I guess, that PR can live on. And then definitely on the affiliate space, there's also a lot of overlap in that you can have Instagram influencers sharing their affiliate links. So that could be like a share a sale link. More often, it's a sub-affiliate network that's kind of more tailored towards Instagram, something like a Like to Know It or a shop style link where they're sharing those affiliate links within their stories or within their bio. And, you know, we're seeing then those commissions come through on the affiliate platform side or on the brand side. And then TikTok Shop is definitely an area that's really exploding. And our agency has tried to really meet that need with starting to kind of help clients get set up on the shop. But it's kind of opening up an entirely new affiliate network because that runs completely on TikTok Shop and not on, you know, share a sale or impact, which I think actually leads into a broader thing that I've just noticed over the last 4 years is kind of like the bifurcation of affiliate and D2C at large, maybe even a larger conversation where when I first started Dream Day 5 years ago, like we were exclusively working with direct-to-consumer brands. Now there's no direct-to-consumer brands, really. Everyone is trying to be omnichannel and everyone is trying to be in, you know, Ulta and Nordstrom and, you know, Walmart and Target and Amazon. And that has actually led to a lot of challenges with affiliate marketing because the way that brands find the attribution is the most simplest way. Let's use Breitland as an example. Vogue talks about Breitland, consumer comes to the website and purchases, that attribution is tracked through share a sale, let's say, and, you know, we can prove the value of our work very easily when we get that attribution. But if Breitland is in Erewhon or Sprouts or Target or what have you, and they might read about that article online, then they're walking into their store and actually buying it, there's no affiliate attribution that's taking place. Or if they're on Amazon, that's also another challenge. There's a new company called Levanta that's trying to solve for this a bit. But when publishers are more incentivized to direct to Amazon than they are to the brand's PDP or to the brand's website, it's a huge challenge. And sometimes publishers will receive 9 to 10 times the amount of commission they would because they get commission on the entire basket purchase. If you're like, oh, I also need diapers and paper towels in addition to this olive oil or whatever it is. So the publishers are making a lot more by sending traffic to Amazon, but the attribution is lost through the affiliate platform. So there's a lot of really interesting challenges that have come from kind of there being, you know, a lot of different surfaces for people to promote products on.
In addition to the nuance around actually owning the customer data, you know, going direct to customer via Shopify sale or something like that. Or selling your product on a third-party marketplace like Amazon, where after that first sale, obviously Amazon owns the customer, they own the customer data, a lot different in terms of remarketing. I do want to ask you about some big press opportunities for startup brands. So a lot of listeners are thinking about, you know, some quick hacks to generating free PR that actually drives ROI. I don't know if this goes against the grain here, but I would love your opinion. If you were in the startup seat, how could you find some free PR?
Yeah, I would say that there's no free PR. You have to work for it.
Right.
But, you know, I think that, like I said earlier in the show, when brands are doing interesting things, it's a great way to generate buzz. It doesn't mean that you have to launch a new product, you know, every quarter. That helps. It's always helpful to have something newsworthy to talk about. But I think, you know, doing really interesting collaborations or partnerships or campaigns or just talking about the why behind different decisions made throughout your founder journey even. I think part of our question as publicists is asking the right questions and really asking the why to really dig, you know, deeper and find kind of those nuggets that press are going to be excited about. Because a lot of readers are interested in learning, you know, deeper, why was this company founded? You know, why is this product better than the rest? What was the entrepreneurial journey? What challenges did they have to overcome? What did it take for them to get to this point? Like, what are their growth metrics? A good example is actually Fly by Jing. They had an amazing dumpling launch and numbers really grab readers' attention. So after 3 months of their dumpling launch, we went back to, you know, Jing and her team, and we said, if you were to count up every single dumpling that has been sold in these bags, because we didn't want to say how many bags necessarily have been sold. We didn't want to really say how much revenue has been generated, but what's something else we can, you know, talk about that's interesting and free PR? How many dumplings? And it was over 1 million dumplings. So that was just amazing. And we went to press with that stat. And of course, like, the media kind of ate it up, and we got tons of stories that said, you know, Fly by Jing sold over 1 million dumplings in their first 3 months. I think it's about just getting creative. The three main takeaways I would say are, one, metrics, two, like, interesting founder story, and three, just like, how are you culturally relevant? Making sure that you are reading all of the different publications that you would want to be in, and making sure that you're kind of playing into what's going on culturally and any of those hooks that can really help you break through the noise.
Yeah, and all that makes for a good story. So you're sort of doubling down on what you've already said. Thank you so much for that. Fly by Jing actually was a guest on Shopify Masters a little while back. So
amazing.
I encourage listeners to check out that episode. I'm chatting with Lauren Kleiman, founder of Dream Day and The Quality Edit. We'll get into The Quality Edit in just a second. First, I'd like to take a moment to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in to the show today. If you haven't already, please make sure to subscribe to Shopify Masters wherever you get your audio. Leave us a review and feedback for the show. We certainly appreciate it.
Hey, Ishwang. I just wanted to pop in and share some exciting news with you. Our podcast, Shopify Masters, just got nominated for a Shorty Award in the Best Branded Podcast category. We are so honored and would love your support. You can vote for us every single day until the end of April. Visit shortyawards.com, that's S-H-O-R-T-Y awards.com, or check out the link in our description to vote. Thank you so much.
So Lauren, how did Quality Edit get started? What's the origin story?
Yeah. So Quality Edit actually started as a side hustle. My co-founder and I, as I mentioned, were at Ritual together. I was founding team and VP of marketing, and she was heading all of our growth and took us from $0 in spend to hundreds of million. And we essentially found that there were several strategies that really helped Ritual find scale and efficiency on paid social. And many of them had to do with third-party credibility and validation. In other words, how can you bring a customer in that kind of already has education and validation before they've ever landed on your site? And we worked with all the top publications in the space. We found that many of them were kind of very old school and didn't really know how to create performance marketing partnerships that would actually back out for brands. So long story short, we decided to start this side hustle and really build a new kind of publication and agency ourselves. So we are an organic publication, thequalityedit.com, and have built over the last 4 years really high trust rating with our audience. But we also built essentially a performance agency out of the publication. We've coined this term called performance publishing, which essentially helps brands arbitrage success on paid social by combining all of the things that we saw work at Ritual. So third-party validation, high-quality editorial, landing page development, ad creative, influencer casting and management, and paid social media management and strategy. So we built this agency out of a publication, and I think kind of this approach combines the best of storytelling with performance, where if you work with a traditional performance marketing agency, a lot of times that can actually hurt the brand equity. But with our model of performance publishing, we actually help the brand build that brand equity while being very KPI focused and ROI focused and driving new customer acquisition. So after a year of it being a side hustle, doubled down on building the quality edit. So now I'm the co-founder of the quality edit and the founder of Dream Day. I run two different agencies. And yeah, over there, we've driven over $50 million in incremental revenue for our clients. And
wow.
I think in a lot of ways, feel like we've kind of cracked something really interesting around the future of publishing.
When you say that previously publishing agencies or PR agencies would affect brand equity, how would that happen? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, a lot of times performance agencies are just thinking about performance for performance's sake. So a lot of times they might be, you know, creating creative or ad assets that actually are a detriment to the overall brand equity, not in line with, you know, what a creative director maybe would approve. And so there's always going to be that fine balance of creative versus performance. But I think what we've cracked at the quality edit is kind of the sweet spot of both, where we have an in-house creator roster, over 50 different creators that are really trained in performance and are driving kind of that native UGC creator-led kind of feel to our creative that can be really thumb-stopping and compelling, but is really elevating the brand rather than hurting it.
You mentioned these elements around sort of trust. So consumer validation, reputation, reliability. Beforehand, where do you think the gap was in the market? Like, how were consumers seeking out their brands, and what were some of the publications that they'd be reading reviews on or what have you, whereby, you know, trust started to erode over time? And so what is the gap that you saw in the market?
Yeah, great question. So we actually conducted a reader survey last year that showed that 90% of our audience trusts our recommendations. So that's really high for kind of the standard across the publishing ecosystem. I've seen even other, you know, top tier publications that have maybe like an 80% trust rating. We obviously have a smaller audience, but I feel like it's a small and mighty one. And we've kind of been able to build this cult following. I think the main takeaway was just after I left Ritual, I was getting sent so many cool brands and innovative products. And I felt like a lot of the traditional publications weren't covering them. They were like, you know, maybe too small or not interesting to them, but they were really interesting to me. And so that was kind of my biggest takeaway, was just I wasn't personally reading any of the traditional publications. They didn't really like resonate with me. There's a few that like I used to read, like, you know, Man Repeller or Into the Gloss for recommendations, but I just didn't feel, and again, this was 4 years ago, I just didn't feel that there was like a publication that was dedicated to covering kind of the newest and coolest products that I was interested in, you know, reading about and trying myself.
What's the biggest challenge that you face when it comes to growing both Dream Day and the quality edit? Do you find it difficult to split time between the two?
Yes, incredibly. I'm also a mom. I have two young children. I have a daughter who's 4 and a son who's 6. So I find that, you know, becoming a parent has made me incredibly efficient. And it is still a challenge, though. I think I try to have, you know, dedicated days for both companies for different meetings. But I would say hiring is kind of the most important part. I've been really lucky on the quality edit side to be able to lean on my co-founders and the amazing team that we've built. And on the Dream Day side, I have a chief of staff and a VP and a lot of other senior team members that I can really rely on and trust and, you know, delegate things to. And I just help make sure that the ship is continued to steer in the right direction. But it's not easy. I think my life would be a lot easier if I only had one agency. But it's fun. Every day I'm having a lot of fun. So that's what matters.
That is super important. You're big on company culture. You've talked about this on a bunch of other podcasts. You've personally burned out a couple of times.
Yes.
And interestingly, you've got a new work perk that you just announced at your company retreat last week. Is this related to your own personal experience?
Yeah, definitely related to my own experience. It's interesting. I feel like as I've grown up and matured as a person, as a founder, I'm 34 years old now. I feel like the company has grown up obviously as well too. And a lot of things that I've gone through, I've thought about how do I take that and transcend it into building the best culture that I can. I think on both companies, we've built incredibly close cultures. And we were just at our offsite, our all team offsite for Dream Day last week in Austin. And so many of my team members were like, this is not normal. Like the culture that we've built is something that is really special. Everyone is like very tight knit, very close friends. And, you know, we're over 20 people now. So I think that becomes harder and harder to do as you, you know, really scale. Mm-hmm. But one thing is I've always been blessed to work with founders and companies that put culture first. I've said this before, but I've never really had a bad job, which I feel very lucky to be able to say. But I feel like I learned my entire career firsthand from some of the best founders, Kat at Ritual, Walter Driver at Scopely, what it means to build a really impactful culture in a place that people really want to work. And then I think, like you said, personally, in going through burnout, you know, one, maybe two times, I also know what I don't want to have in my life and the things that I want to say no to. And I feel like really culture does start at the top. And if you're not taking care of yourself and becoming your best self every day as much as you can, strive towards that, it's going to be reflected in your culture. So, you know, definitely not perfect, but I feel like the things that I go through, I try to extend, you know, to our team. So an example that I think you were alluding to is I was very fortunate to be able to take 4 weeks off over the last 4 months and get my yoga training certificate. So I did a 200-hour yoga training. And again, would not have been able to do that without the incredible support of my team on both companies. But it was hands down the best thing I've ever done for myself. And especially with having kids, there's not a lot of times where, you know, you get to do something that's just for yourself. And for me, I'm not looking to become a yoga teacher. So it was also like not really goal oriented. It was just like for pure enjoyment and pure self-betterment. And so last week at our team offsite with Dream Day, I had the privilege of teaching our entire team yoga. Which was something that almost as I was getting my yoga training, I was thinking, how cool would it be if I could like extend this to our team and share it with our team? But I wanted to take it a bit further too and, you know, pass on the privilege that I got to be able to take that time away. So this is the first time I've shared this publicly, but we announced during that session that we're going to be giving $1,000 stipend and a week for a PTO to our entire team for anyone that wants to do anything that's going to better themselves spiritually, physically, emotionally. So whether that's taking a cooking class or becoming a Pilates instructor or, you know, diving into like leadership training, for example, I wanted to make sure that that benefit was extended in a way where, you know, I really believe that people bring their entire whole selves to work. And if we can create happy people who are happy outside of work, they're going to be, you know, happier at work and, you know, more productive and amazing employees.
That's amazing. I mean, that's not nothing. You've got 20 employees. You said $1,000 stipend. If all 20 take you up on that, that's 20 grand.
Yeah.
Invested directly in company culture. So
yeah, absolutely.
You're obviously putting your money where your mouth is. That's incredible.
Thank you.
And all this, I mean, has paid dividends to some extent. Dream Day has won a few awards related to company culture.
Yeah.
Fast Company marked you guys as one of the most innovative companies of this year, 2024. Inc. magazine ranks you as a power partner, but also more importantly, one of the best places to work in 2023. And hopefully you get that award also this year in 2024. So congrats. That's amazing. You should tell them about the $20,000 you're investing in health and wellness.
Cool. I got to see when that application deadline is. But yeah, the Fast Company Most Innovative was actually like a bucket list item of mine. I'd always applied on behalf of the companies that I was working for Fast Company Most Innovative. And for me, it was just like such a career highlight. Like I said, a bucket list achievement. That was incredible to win. We're going to be accepting our award in New York in May. But the Inc. Award for Best Workplaces was also one that was really near and dear to me because it was very rigorous. I was actually surprised. They interview every single team member in a very like extensive way. And every single team member has to go through like this, you know, confidential process of filling out survey form and giving different testimonials. And obviously we ranked really high on that. So that was just an incredible testament to kind of the culture that we've built.
No, it's amazing. What's on tap for Dream Day or the Quality Edit this year? What are you guys looking forward to most?
Yeah, I mean, on both businesses, we have really aggressive growth goals. I think on the Dream Day side, our goal is to continue to grow the agency, continue to create, you know, best-in-class culture, definitely retain all of our clients and our headcount while doing so. And then on the Quality Edit side, we figured out kind of how to monetize from day one. And we really had kind of that like agency wherewithal and expertise of kind of how we could, like I said, build an agency out of a publication. But for us this year, a lot of our goals are around investing in organic growth. So whether that's investing in, you know, more editors and more content that's being created at the Quality Edit, I think we're releasing like 3 or 4 different articles every single day, but also investing in our Instagram, growing our TikTok, growing our newsletter, and figuring out how to also just be more culturally relevant, whether that's working with different celebrities or influencer partnerships, and bringing kind of the Quality Edit into the broader cultural ecosystem is part of our goals there as well.
That's amazing. Well, congrats on all the success thus far. Wishing you all the best in 2024 for
both
Quality Edit and, of course, Dream Day. For listeners who want to find out more about what you're building, where can they follow you on social?
Yeah, I'm lauren.kleinman on Instagram. Our website is dreamday.la, or you can find Dream Day on Instagram as well, thequalityedit.com, or thequalityedit at Instagram, and we're on TikTok as well.
Awesome. Lauren, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Loved all of your questions.
That's Lauren Kleinman, founder of Dream Day and The Quality Edit. Our show is produced by Megan Coyle and Gogo Zoger. Our engineers are Matt Schwartz and Miku Betlem. Benjamin Gottlieb is our managing producer. Shuang Esther Shan is our other host. And I'm Adam Levinter. We'll catch you on Tuesdays and Thursdays for the next episodes of Shopify Masters.